Thank you very much. We are on day two of the portfolio committee meeting on human settlement, dealing with the annual performance report. Yesterday we received issues report and CFE, and then in the afternoon we interacted with the report of the department. Today we are interacting with the entity of the Department of Human Settlement, peace and government. Your voices must not be said. Please go to the doctor. You are starting to be deaf. Now, the entities of the department generally are eight, but we know that there is three that have been striving to be one. The only problem is the issue of the lobola between them. That is not finalized, so they don't know who must be the husband, who must be the wife, and what is that. I hope that those three, their presentations are going to be very short because they are in the context of amalgamation. So we're starting with those like our. So that at least by the time we get to the head work, we have dealt with the positive. We want to welcome everyone who is here, particularly the Chief Minister. So, for the first place, you know that today is a cabinet committee, and she opted to be with us. We really appreciate that. We also know that the minister is at the cabinet, they have to divide the funds. We have also agreed in public that some of the officials will be in and out because of the nature of the work that they are doing. So whilst the DG is not here now, but I know DG Cherry is here, DG who is responsible for the entity is here. So I think we are fine, we are okay. The direct responsible people are here in the meantime. We want to welcome the officials and the heads of the entities that are here now, whatever like that. And we will then head over to NHFC. Otherwise known as National Housing Finance Corporation, to start, and hopefully by the end of the two entities we will be told that this is the last time we see you as two. We will, next time you come here, we will receive you as one. We've been here in this place for some time now. Can it be confirmed by the two entities by the end of the episode? Over to you, NHFC. I know that I don't have any apologies from my old colleague, except to say that Honorable Solimala might be running late, but he's coming to join us. When Honorable Sabin is also coming late, he's also on his way. But otherwise, you said the apology that you achieved yesterday are still standing in terms of Honorable Stone, Honorable Shalembe, Honorable Shoman. Okay. Thank you very much. Over to you, Mr. Morako.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and the portfolio committee.
You have a mic in front of you. They gave it to you to talk because they know that your voice is very strong.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Portfolio Committee Member, DM. We're honored to have you here and the executive of the department. And to my colleagues, as the Chair has alluded, I'm not alone in considering ourselves presenting individually, but we actually have shared all the presentations that have been presented this morning. I want to begin just to refine the great chair, just to talk about two things about the overview, because what the chair said we should conclude with is that NHFD is self-sustaining, and I think that the core of even the bank, HSDB, it has to be self-sustaining, and if possible it needs to be calibrated so that we can raise funding.
Yeah, that's the phone. Can I please have initiative? I'm manage their phone. Please, I can see I'm not going to say anybody's name, but can I please make, have the phone off, please? Because I can't be having the phone running off, on and off
the second point I was alluding to is the president is acknowledging. The second point is the credit rating of the institution is also one of the paramount things. I think I leave the objective, which we will actually talk to later. I think what is important is that through your share is just to highlight some of the strategic issues that we are confronted with. As the economy, we're all there together. I think the challenge for NHFD, and I think even for going forward, is how do we balance achieving our targets and at the same time managing this transition that we're involved in. It always remains a challenge. But the point which I'd like to also emphasize is the capitalization of the consolidated NHFD during the medium-term strategic framework. That capitalization has been reduced overall, as we all know, and it remains a challenge. I think when we come back to one, but also to highlight the fact that there are key entities in the investment, and I think what we're saying is better coordination so that we can leverage private sector capacity and funding would actually assist, meaning the SRA and the HDRC, HDA, and ultimately the Human Settlement Development Bank. So we have to leverage private sector capacity and resources, and we can do it better if we come from the same platform. I think lastly is the whole issue that as a development finance institution, the clients that we provide services to, over time they graduate, they mature, and we let them go to the market to get funding. But that is a double-edged sword, because on one hand, you want to continue to receive revenue from them so that they can be self-sustained, but on the other hand, you let them to the market because that's part of the developmental impact. So it is a major challenge, because the good ones go, then you start up again, and that has some cost. Some areas of success that we'd like just to highlight from the strategic partnership is that with our funding, as you will see later on, which is also included in the report, we have dispersed directly 9 billion, but we have been able to leverage 21 billion from other institutions, which facilitated the delivery that we have shown here. And also through one of our, let's say, associate companies, which owns 33%. We've been very instrumental in the inner city regeneration or urban regeneration. Inner cities, I can say, it's not only in the housing, it's in housing cases and in PE, and now we're beginning in Bloom content. Because inner cities are getting dilapidated, those buildings, some of those are being change from commercial to residential, and people are moving into the cities, and therefore inner city rental accommodation is becoming critical. And through that, we've been able to deliver about 20,000, let's say 400 units today. And through other strategic partnerships, we are also experimenting products. This case is with Old Mutual through Housing Investment Partnership, and we've delivered about 3,000 loans and using that instrument. And then the issue of the international housing solution is still in process, where we put in 300 million and we're able to raise 3 billion, which will be used for a number of projects throughout the country. Now, lastly, on the key, another area of success is being able to raise, to mobilize funding into the human settlement. In this case, we've been able to test the funding of AFD, EIB, and potentially right now we're talking to AFD, the African Development Bank, and KfW, which already are part of the funding as they funded the Rural Housing Loan Fund in that regard. And then other DFIs that we are engaging with at the moment is the PIC, and DBSA is made on the student accommodation, it's not any other. And we've played an advocacy role, and that role is where we enable the environment in which we operate. I think one of the key things, the whole issue of transfer and stamp duty, we initiated this in 2002 for properties that were at the time more than 300 million. Right now, the threshold has been set to 900, which actually does improve affordability for the household. And also, as an HFC, we've been able to get the tax exempt data. Up to now, since inception, we've paid about 480 million in taxes. Now, going forward, that money will be replenished into human settlement, and it won't be given as part of the fiscal. Just a snapshot, which is in the annual report itself, in terms of performance. I think I'd just like to highlight the BEE component, where we've delivered about 329 million to BEE. Now, both this is in rental, and there are beginnings of those also in social housing. But I think what is more important is that we've been able to mobilize 2.2 billion through our third parties into this sector. And I will ask Lawrence just to proceed with the performance presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have Lawrence.
How many of those units are
meet the target, the minimum target, and beyond the minimum target of 232. And then our training, 90% of staff training, we exceeded that target. Then is the life that we impact 95,000, and the CFO will talk about the financials where we have generated a surplus of 100 million. Then the CEO has indicated we check also the investment we made to BEE, in terms of BEE, they reached 329 million. The rest really is the detail in terms of the cumulative over the years, which is the investment. They are close to 8 billion rand since NHSC was established over 20 years ago. Then the development impact, those are the people that we impact, 543,000. The funds that we leveraged over the years, 21 billion, we have come from that. Financial performance, the CFO will talk about that. The one slide I need to relate it to performance is to check our performance against the MPSF plan. We are in the last year, so what we are reporting on the extreme column in the green bar, percentage wise, is where we are in terms of our results. For the 4 years, we have 673%. So we have this year remaining to make up the balance of the 27% on approval, and then the investment also we have, we can make up that 13% balance in this year. The rest of the target, we are way ahead of those targets. So I think my presentation ends here. Chairperson and my colleague Zola will address the financial report. That's one of the questions that I would like. Thank you.
Thank you, Ivan.
It was nice, and it's a program. You had a mic to each other.
I have recently taken over as Chief Financial Officer, acting, by the way, I'm not the former Master Chief since March. So I'll be taking you through the slides in terms of our financial performance. Feel free to ask any questions if you have any questions to ask. But in terms of that first slide, what we've talked in the extreme left way is our performance. 2016, 2017, well, 2018. And in orange is our surplus before taxation.
Hang on,
that's hang on there. Yeah. What is that? Whose phone is that? Can I please have that phone?
My phone.
I had made an announcement before you came, John. So that phone is coming to me now.
Okay.
We show our performance in 2017. The orange is the company performance, and I guess the gray, if I'm calling that, is the performance. And then on the two right there, it's again reflecting our surplus at company level as well as at group level. I think what comes out here is that we had an extremely difficult financial year in terms of performance in 2016, where we generated losses there. You can see a negative 86 million and a negative 66 million in 2016. And mainly to do with the fact that we had a significant impairment in those particular years. In terms of write-offs as well as impairment, I think at company level we have a negative number of 235 million in 2016. subsequent to that, managed to clean out our loan book, if I can call it that, and we turned around our performance in 2017, and then in 2018, as you can see, quite satisfactory with a profit or surplus before a taxation of 101 million. So I think we're quite happy with the performance that we've achieved in the last 2 years of the entity. And then in terms of the statement of comprehensive income, we've done that at group level, and again, just showing you our actual performance against the budget and the variance against the budget, and then on the extreme right of the previous performance. Again, as a lending entity, we are typically driven by our lending income, as a key driver there, that's the top line there, as well as our impairment. As you can imagine, that is also an important line item for entities such as ours. And then our operating expenses or operational efficiency, those are the key line items, if I may describe them. And as you can see, against the budget, we have significantly outperformed. That's the question you want to ask, is why that happened. The main reason for that is we have impairments that are less than our budget. We came in with impairment at 1 million versus the budget of 90 million. Again, a reflection of the fact that we have in the last 2 years been able to manage our credit losses and the quality of our loan book. And then the other line item which has done quite well for us is our investment income. Typically where we have any surplus income or surplus money or funds that we are holding on our balance sheet before we deploy on projects, we typically invest that money in money market instruments. So that is that line item there, labeled investment income. We generate income there of between 6% and 7% on that money, on the money market instruments. Obviously the idea is over time we deploy that money in various projects, obviously then convert into lending income, which is a top line item there. But again, just to highlight some of the key things there, our performance has been, I guess, quite exemplary. We hope to continue going forward, but I think there are indications that the economy is going to be a catch-up. We'll see how things can be going forward. And then that's the balance sheet of the HSC at group level. The total number there, if you look at our assets, 3.5 million assets, about 70% of that is, 65% of that is sitting in our loans and advances, which is our top line item there of about 2 million. And then we've got a couple of equity investments there with our strategic partners who invested money in some of our strategic partners. And then the other significant item there will be the money market instrument. As I mentioned, it's about 900 million in money market instruments, which we have committed to a couple of projects going forward. We're going to deploy that money in a couple of projects going forward. And then in terms of the summary, key financial indicators, again, surplus for the year. Again, just summarizing the group level as well as the company level against our budget. Again, I can overall say that the performance has been satisfactory against our budget. Our return on equity at 3.2% at group level versus the budget at 0.5%. I think my take is that as an entity, we'd like to see that number rising towards an inflation type return, in other words, 5% to 6%. So that is really the target that on a return on equity basis. And then cost to income ratio, that's a measure of our efficiency, of how we our revenue compares to our operating expenses. And that's a key number that a lot of financial institutions look at. At group level, it's sitting at 42%, versus the budget at 62%. Company, 40% versus 46%. I guess the question you're going to ask is, what has happened there in terms of the performance there? Why have we been able to perform quite well? We've been quite we've been looking at our expenses of business very closely and have taken an exercise of cost containment, especially with respect to our outsourced services. And that's reflected in that number there. And there are a couple of key positions in the company that we have not filled in the last 2 to 3 years, mainly due to the pending DFI with the merger and that. So that's worked out quite positive for the industry. Managed to run the business quite efficiently from a cost point of view. And then the credit loss ratio, again, an important number that we look at. Okay, again, very much in line with our pattern. Lawrence, I think, is going through that slide. I'm going to just keep it very brief. And then in terms of the external audit, very briefly, just to give a bit of background, because probably a challenging year for the HFC in terms of the external audit, mainly due to the fact that the party that we were appointed as our external auditor, Gonki Inc., we appointed them in November 2017. Unfortunately, you are all aware that Gonki Incorporated went through a fiscal patch, and as a result of that, in April 2018, the Auditor General terminated the concurrent approval of the appointment of Gonki Inc. with respect to auditing of all entities that are in the that are state-owned or government departments. So we have to terminate that contract. The issues around, I guess if I can call it, issues around the morality of some of the dealings that we're involved in. And so essentially our external audit started quite late this year, 4 weeks late, because of the fact that we had to terminate the appointment of Gonki and then appoint the Auditor General, and we lost about 4 to 5 weeks. And then on the 31st of July, AG had not completed the external audit, and they had to inform National Treasury, as well as the Department of the Delays, in terms of inability to submit our annual financial statement. And then on the 31st, once again, they had to inform again, they had not completed the external audit, they had to write a letter to National Treasury, to the Department, to the DG, informing that they were not able to submit the audit before the time. They were then submitted on the 14th of September. And I have to say that it was an unqualified audit opinion, but if you look at the next slide, there are a couple of areas that they identified as areas of improvement, which we shall be working on going forward. The key one is to do with the area around supply chain management. They identified 2.9 million as irregular expenditure. It was due to that non-compliance with the regulation, yes, and certain regulation around getting three-way codes and complex claims for certain purchases of goods and services. And on the investigation, it revealed no financial loss. The HFC and action plan right now is trying to strengthen our internal controls and make sure that we comply with that particular requirement around following certain regulations around purchasing of goods and services. Then the other area was predetermined outcome indicators need to be enhanced and supported by supporting evidence. And then they also want to mention raise the issue around tightening and enforcing that by the time we report on the 31st of May, the financial statement does not have too many adjustments post the 31st of May. So those are the key findings from our external auditor. And then the remedial action, I won't talk too much about that, but we have put in place in the last 6 months. I think it's a key performance indicator for myself is to make sure that I address all these issues around our supply chain, make sure that we are complying in full with the Treasury regulation in terms of either three-way codes or ensuring that we follow a public tender process around performance. A review around enhancing our system. I think we need to bring in some automation around our supply chain management. So we're looking at a couple of options around system based. And then augmenting our skill base, we are merging with Delta as well as us. So I hope to capture some of the skill sets that we in those two entities. So yeah, that's really the key issues really around our audit. I'll hand over now to someone else to speak to the rest of the talk.
Unfortunately, it says another name again. We had Zonia Adams, if they can remember. Zonia was the CFO, that's why you got an
accent.
Madam Chair, I think the issue is maybe you'll hear more of with even the short event. The challenge is the social housing, and in terms of non-payment of rent and rent boycott taking place in some of the projects. Both here in the Western Cape and Cape's end. I think that in itself is impacting negatively, especially to the portfolio that we have on social housing. Already our non-performing loans, by percentage, is now getting to from 20 to 24 simply because of the social housing component of our group, simply because of non-payment. So we just raising it as it remains a challenge. But just to come back to what Madam Chair referred to at the beginning, the establishment of the Human Settlement Development Bank has two phases. The phase one is the consolidation of the three entities, and phase two is actually the establishment of the bank itself, which is preceded by an approved business case, an enabling legislation, and that being approved by the Joint Evaluation Panel and by our minister, then it goes through the process, the parliamentary process. But what I'm happy to confirm to the portfolio committee this morning is that in September we received the approval of National Treasury, Minister of Finance at the time for technology. That is the transfer of all assets and liabilities of National Rural to the NHSB. We are busy right now implementing that decision. And so it's true, Madam Chair, that this is the last time that we, in fact, what we've said is the first half of the year will report separately in this year, and then the second part of the year to March 2019 will report as a consolidated entity. So next time we come back, it will be just NHSB, which incorporates the divisions of the other two. I think it's a significant milestone, especially towards the establishment of the Human Settlement Development Bank. Just in brief, we highlighted what that actually entails in terms of the steps that we have to go through to come to a place where on the PFMA requirements we've got both sections 54 and 56 now approved. Now the section 38 will come in when we set up the bank itself, so that one will take place in the not too distant future. Now we're going to go back, once we have consolidated the assets and liabilities of National Rural to the NHSC, we go back to our funders who have given us the permission to go ahead with the consolidation. So I could say that, Madam Chair, phase one is complete of the consolidation once we transfer those assets and liabilities. And then we're proceeding with in fact, at an advanced stage with phase two, which is the business case and enabling legislation, preparing that for firstly ministerial approval and thereafter presenting that to the Joint Evaluation Panel. Now, in terms of structure within the NHFC, what will change is it will be what was commonly known as VALC. It will be division, it will be incremental unsecured lending portfolio within division within NHFC. If somebody from outside were to say, I'm calling out, I want to know something about incremental unsecured lending, then that will be a division of NHFC that deals with that. And this will be no longer rural because now it's both national. It will be serving both urban and rural at the same time. And that's why it's more about unsecured lending or incremental housing. And then on the other hand, when it comes to finance of projects, affordable and subsidy housing, that now becomes a division of the NHFC going forward, because what was formerly NHFC. So that's how the structure would be as of once we have transferred assets and liabilities. Outlook for 2018-19. First is successful conclusion of phase one of the consolidation, and at the same time we're working towards the approval process for the business case and the draft legislation by the Joint Evaluation Panel. But first it has got to go through our own human settlement processes before it goes there. And I think I spoke about the issue of the social housing sector. We also expect an uptick in that regard because of the changes in the bands and the quantum. That there might be activity barring just the strike and the non-payment, the rent boycott that we're having in that sector. Well, Madam Chair, I think that concludes our presentation. Let me leave the other matter. Maybe we will deal with it when it deals with the developer. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Malaba. Are you saying we must deal with it, or maybe whatever the issue that you are dealing with?
I'll ask you to do it.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to make sure that you take decisive action as an executive which you have given your power. You must take decisive action. And I want to leave. And thank you very much for that presentation. That's the NHFC, ladies and gentlemen. We'll just ask questions of clarity. But before that, just to confirm to the House that the AG did confirm the facts as presented by this report, that due to the discharge of OT and GOT, as the office of the AG, they had to take over the office of NHSC. And of course, they did confirm that it was delayed, and they did confirm that it is an unqualified outcome. If AG was just told us that, if they had not told us that, it was going to be very difficult for us to actually accept the report. So we are safe by the agency for confirming those processes. I just wanted to make sure that we confirm to you that AG is confirmed that the process. Thank you very much. Question of clarity, honorable or comment? Yes, honorable Baha, I see you there. Anybody else who wants to take an honorable Farai?
Thank you, Chair. I think firstly, it must be appreciated that when we talk about a measure or a control division of some sort of entities, it's important to do that with a healthy component of that measure. And I think that this is quite encouraging. But that's the one clarification question for me. I think in the presentation it is raised that there's an issue of non-payment of vendors. And I know that that normally leads to a sudden, you know, collapse or slide in terms of revenue collection. I just want to check what actions are envisaged or are in the pipeline to try and collect or turn that around. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks for the presentation. Just a question to have a comment. Chair, I think this is the norm. Where the AD is coming, writing of the ATC and contact about the people. This is the thing that is done, generally, fully. Forget to take off on the city of Homs office. And it's my concern that why police are saying in that way? All the representation you have got city book. Every time the challenge is very difficult. That are not the things of the entity.
Thank you very much, colleague. First, to approve the EDF report on the consolidation phase, which is phase one of the industry in terms of the report. And we hope that at some point, the operational integration will be given in detail to the portfolio committee. I know that it's there in the report, but it's a summarized form. But remember, once now NHSC works as an integrated head of the agency, we would love to have that operation integrated, particularly from the fact that we've always been raising the issue of staffing and so we can have that in place for at some point in the transition. I want to also comment the in the report you spoke about the issue of the stamp duty that you have raised from 200,000 to 900,000 in terms of making sure that it's only paid from above that. And maybe that's for the benefit of the members That explains. Don't assume that you know what you should be about. I might know, one might know, but that's probably that explains it. What that means in terms of the economy of this country and in terms of making sure that how does it affect the farmers that we call. The other part is that you spoke about the inner city program. It's one of the biggest programs that we're dealing with. I would have loved, I know probably you might not be able to, but I would have loved to, besides you having a presence in the metro, because we know that your presence is big in Gauteng, in particular in the city of Johannesburg. Your presence is big in the city of the metro. Your presence is big here in the city of Kisa. But I would have loved to see your presence, you know, broader, to explain more broader. And also to explain your presence in this program. Is it through the developers or is it through the government agencies like your municipalities or your provinces? Not in detail, that may be just to give that so that people can understand how your presence is made in this program of the inner city and regeneration. The last part is on your relationship with SRA. I know you've tackled this around the issue of social housing and the fact that the issue of rent payment, which is a problem now, is kind of becoming a problem. And maybe if you can just explain a bit your relationship and how is it maintained and how is it sustained, your relationship between yourself and SRA. And I would love that, I know that normally when you finish the presentation, in the money rush for the flight. I would love that probably one of you could stay when SRA presents one of you. But when we interact with SRA on this issue of the social housing problem, one of you is here to after this that election. Thank you very much. I'm going to allow them to respond at the end. And then give the history and then give you.
Thank you, Marinci. Let me start with the same duty of transfer. Normally when you buy a house, I think at the time when we thought about this, it was where the threshold was 300,000. You normally pay legal fees and you also pay to the receiver stamp duty and transfer stamp duty and transfer cost. It's part of the cost that the household needs to bear as total cost of buying the house. Now what you said is if you're trying to promote affordability for the household, most households, especially that bracket of housing unit 300, they may not have all this money. And rather, is it possible, that's what we asked the Reserve Bank at the time, that this can actually be zero, well, not rated, but to make zero, just to improve affordability, so that all that the household needs to incur is just the legal cost. But the other cost is actually zero. So, it was approved then, and then every year the inflationary almost increased this. In fact, almost it moved from 300 to 350, 400, 500, 600. Now the threshold is at 900, which means that even if it's right above the affordability level of the market that we're serving, but what it does anyway is improve the affordability across the board. So, and that's, I think, part of our role as a development finance institution to bring this sector to be enabled, especially not just for entities or for the clients that we have, but also for having the household in mind. So that's really the role that we continuously play to make sure that we improve affordability and we broaden access at the same time. And then let me deal with consolidation. Yeah, Director will come back on the operational integration for consolidation, which is, I know this issue they've raised before, and I've been mindful of that, and the three of us, and therefore we'll come back with a detailed report on that. Another thing about rentals, I think this is a challenge, especially in social housing, but I'm happy to let the portfolio committee know that we are working together with the SHRA and the department, by the way, to try and find a resolution to these matters through the Office of the DG. There's been sessions which were facilitated, where we got entities involved. Actually, we had at one point, it was SHRA, myself, and Rokri, and with the NEC trying to resolve the matter about the particular client where there was this rental for cost. And we all committed in terms of contribution of what contribution can be made to try and find resolution to that matter. And indeed, we did find resolution. So from that point of view, I can give that comfort that we are working together with the SHRA, but not in all instances. I see Lawrence is looking at me and saying, everywhere. This was a particular instance where I was involved, when Lord was involved, and because the particular NEC and we engaged, and all ended up contributing individually to try to find resolution to that. I think what concerns us is that, maybe for the portfolio committee, is that events like this happening in one place, it gets communicated elsewhere. And you see this recurring here in Western Cape, with KZN, but it's a similar thing as well, maybe similar kind of challenges. So that's something that we are trying to work at. I don't know, Lawrence, if you want to add anything on that. I'm fine, yeah. So, yeah, obviously then Lawrence will remain and make sure that he can listen to the engagement of portfolio committee and Lawrence. Now, Madam Chair, I think this issue of, I know it has been raised by the Honourable Member here of three codes. One thing that is, well, which is new to us, which the AG raised with us, is the fact that in some of our service providers we have repeat business, where and either the matter has not been resolved in one instance and you've got to go back to the state, and what they're saying is, irrespective of that, when you go back, especially if you've gone past, let's say, 2000, you still need three codes. Now, we argued with the AG to say, but you know, this is a continuous service, and you don't have to go for somebody new to go and bring that person to take on this matter again. So, but they said, no, treasury regulation, the treasury regulation, you still need to get three codes. So, we're caught off guard, but we said that's what the dollar was saying. Now we're trying to put in place some processes and systems to be able to pick up that. But in some instances, these are the things that not actually was anything fraudulent. It's just the way we did things. We said, oh, this is a continuation of business. But they said, no. According to treasury regulations, you need to go back to get three codes before you proceed. Madam Chair, Scott, I think I have, Inner City. Inner City, let me briefly say that the thrust at the moment is through Wharton, through the funding that we made to some of the housing institutions, like in KZN, the east part of that, which is Inner City, but mainly the one that we speak about is through our associate company called Trust for Urban Housing Finance. They are involved in Inner City financing, predominantly in housing, as Madam Chair has said. But now that trust has now moved, it's regionalized. KZN is now a big trust of Inner City in KZN and in PE and East London. And as I said, Scotland we're beginning to do some work and here in the Western Cape. So maybe the coverage will come with more details on that. It's twin. It's either through direct funding involvement with the institutions in those cities, and secondly is through the Trust for Urban Housing Finance where we own 33%. Thank you, Madam.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Moraba. This is retraining.
I know it's a point that's raised, but it's a footnote, and sometimes these footnotes come back to hurt us. It's on the slide 22 where it speaks about land expropriation. And yesterday we got an IMC, an IMC that's chaired by the deputy president, and I think it's just important that we must speak with the same voice and we must represent what government says about this. Now, India, it says that, for example, some Bosnian originators and the South African Affordable Residential Developers Association indicate that the demand for housing was down in Gauteng, and they attribute this to the expectations by the public for free stands. And I think we must be very careful that when there are these perceptions, or when people say they attribute this, that this must be fact-based. Because if it's not fact-based, it creates the perception, it creates the narrative that there is this issue that as South Africans, and particularly poor South Africans, there's this chaos and anarchy that exists, and it's not that case yet. I think, to be fair, in relation to the affordable housing sector, that may be one of the factors that impacts, but it is not the factor that has impacted upon the drop in affordable. So it's around the question of economics, it's a question of unemployment, all of those kind of things. And I think we have to be very, very careful that we create this association of expropriation and the debate around expropriation, and it's having this huge impact that we can't contain as government. And I think we have to be careful that when people say this, as an entity and as government, we confront these things and say, okay, if you're saying this, provide us with a proof of where this is. Because the reality is that this might not be the case. The also the issue that we need to indicate is in relation to this, where for example there's this issue around expression or experiencing the invasion. There's a concurrent responsibility between ourselves and developers. Because what developers expect is that government must always intervene in relation to privately held land and protect that land. There's a concurrent responsibility on private development, and that's important for us to know. And I think in relation to this, I think what we need to be able to do, especially in the way that we address it as all entities and the department, that we address this issue and be a little more cautious and I think positive in relation to how the expropriation issues will come up, because I think it has had a negative impact on the cost. The issue around the question of land prices and exponential growth in the way that cost is going on is very important. The second issue that I think we just raised was the issue around the question of customers. Robert raised it. And I think one of the things that as a department we've indicated is that TUF presents an opportunity for us to upskill. And I think, I think we did raise this, Samson, but I think it's important maybe at some point between ourselves and ministers to come and present the good story of what TUF has done. Because quietly, Chair, members of the portfolio, they've done a substantial amount of work. And I know that they are moving into the non-metro area. And they've provided us with a situation that says, if you give us 15 million, this is what the exponential result will be. And then the last point here is, again, is the issue around the question of the reinforcer. I think we must just be clear that in specific areas, if we raise the issue and we say it's reinforcer, then it creates this perception that it's a land boycott. So for example, if you look at what happened in the city of Cape Town, it was
as a result of gangs trying to take over a social housing project.
You know, so the question is that, is it a rent boycott or is it about just gang-related criminal elements that are infiltrating social housing projects? And it's one of the issues that we've said, that as a collective between ourselves, the Shra, together with the NHSC and the provinces, to take responsibility for that. And I think we've reached some measure of understanding that there's a collective responsibility around this issue. And in relation to this, we've said that the NHSC needs to be a little more sympathetic in relation to the risk and the risk profile of the social housing. Not that they should be reckless, but they should be a little more cautious in the way that we address that issue. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Noted those comments. Deputy Minister?
Thank you very much, Chair. I just wanted to comment around the issue of rent boycott that the NHSC spoke about. But I think in terms of that, I know what level has said in terms of the element of criminality that one understands. But there is a positive correlation between both managed rental units and the payment of rent. We are worried to a picture person about entry-between units because they are all fall apart. But they don't pay rent, so there's no maintenance. And the issue here is the issue between ourselves and Shra, because these are social housing units, institutions, and the LHSC and provinces, as said. But I just want to say, Chairperson, I'm very happy with the report of LHSC, particularly the adherence to principles of good government. I think that we need to say that. But I just want to say, I'm very excited. At this point in time, we're arriving at Human Settlement Development Bank. It's inside. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, DM. And I hope the members have noted the issue of the rent boycott, which will carry over when we are interacting with Shra, because it's something that we need to have a discussion with them. But that excitement of the Maraba about the development that issue that is, don't forget, that has been handed over to you by Mr. Moraba. I hope you took note. Mr. Moraba, did you tell Mr. Costa what that issue is?
Yes, it has been dealt with by level
of the lender protection. Okay, it has been dealt with by the men's association. I know the three is there, but the French half of the team arrived at 11. Let me talk to you, Mona. Yeah, I'm not an applicant. Thank you.
morning, Honorable Chair and members, and colleagues from the official department. We are presenting a report on the annual report, and perhaps we will not spend time because portion of the work on the current MTSF. We'll deal with the annual report and what the outcomes of the report for that, and then deal with the strategy of marketing. NESA, as we would know, finances, its mandate is to finance small, medium, and established contractors and developers that are delivering low and moderate houses for low and moderate income households. And we have developed products over the years that seek to fulfill this mandate. Further, perhaps with some institutional memory that is remaining in this committee, you remember, Chair, that about 7 years ago, issues that were confronting NESA were issues of the village, and because of defaults that were arising. And the conversations at that stage with the National Treasury and the committee were about restoring sustainability, but not retreating from the mandate, and that formed the strategic objectives of the financial strategy of the past 3 years about continuing relevance to the mandate, yet recovering in terms of sustainability. And therefore, this scorecard test is a high level encapsulation of progress that has been made on that. One of the interventions were the change of the lending model, and a number of people will know that in the market we used to have two intermediaries, and we took over from those intermediaries that were doing and fulfilling certain parts of the business process of NESA, and all that was taken in-house, and that was done successfully. We improved credit rules, and in the conversations around improving credit rules, it became clear that the credit rules had an impact on new entrant agreements, and the hard conversations that we had with the department were saying we can't close off access to finance for small enterprises, that small contractors that are entering the market. And those conversations led to a grant that was given by the department of about 20 million then to continue exploring ways of financing women and new entrants and the youth. And that's where the contractor finance and development program came to be, which includes mentoring and helping contractors to develop. We dealt with control of the loan book. At this stage of the transaction towards the Human Settlement Development Bank, part of the intervention, the write-offs and the recoveries that we took in those years are part of some of the things and collections that will be handed over, and there's work around that in terms of where collection book, how we will deal with it going forward, and those are the conversations that we will take there. We did, and we put it as EMBA, the issue of buy-in by provinces and municipalities to protocols to make sure that contractors that are financed, we would know as the committee that contractors that are financed do not have security, and therefore we have to have collaboration with various stakeholders to make sure that the conductors can access finance, but there are measures that protect us from default. And those collaborations was, there were progress with some provinces, in some provinces we were retarded. And I think that in the year that we're reporting on, we saw again the rise of defaults that are as a result of fraudulence. there are conversations. We've had conversations with the department, and we are at advantages in terms of a circular to all employers of contractors, municipalities, and provinces. And we are at a stage where even yesterday we had engagement with the National Treasury, with a number of other financiers that are endeavoring to get into this market of financing smaller or financing contractors that cannot access finance. And it was a useful engagement with Treasury around CSD and how the risks that come with the central supplier database and the accounts that we control and all those things, which affected a number of suppliers. And what is emerging is that, and there were in that engagement, there were even big banks where we have been insisting on the banks to venture into financing contractors. And one of the banks that was there was after the bank. They endeavored to finance their first project in this financial year, but because of CSD complications, they made a loss on that one project where they started in their program of financing, which tells of the challenge that we still have to face. So that collaboration between ourselves as NHFC, Treasury, and the department, which will culminate in a Treasury instruction that will go into the market, would be quite an advance in terms of opening, again, opportunities for contractors to access finance. So that's an area that is still, ever that still has to be concluded. We also in the strategy got into the program management engagement in terms of support on developmental programs that have been recorded in the community. So the core business areas are really lending, which is the mainstay of nature, and program management, where we require some program management capabilities in order to open up opportunities and minimize risk. So over the years, these are the reports that will be the performance that we've registered since starting the journey of restoring sustainability, and we reported and ended with a good loan book that was at 80% of our capacity at the end of the financial year, which is the financial year that we're reporting on. This trend, if we look closer, I just want to highlight a few elements. If you look at the orange, those would be overdues in our loan book that we will see over the years. The blue would be impairments that we've registered. And you look at the loan book, I will go to the next slide. You look at the loan book at a total aggregated level, that impairments have been managed very well over the last, say, 5 years in terms of that recovery strategy, but we've seen a rise as a result of fraudulent activities by contractors that have got common shareholdership. And that those contractors that have common shareholdership, we are in court in terms of recovering those funds that we were defrauded of. So affordable housing, the trend in affordable housing, over the last 6 years, you've seen good managed impairments, but with economic decline, in the year we're reporting on, you've seen a rise on impairments, particularly by emerging contractors that have sort of felt the knock of the market as well as the economic decline. The trend on, again, particularly housing, you would see that over the years, the impairments have been managed very well. And again, it centers around the point that I was making, that impairments still rise in impairments when instruments of controlling those financing instruments collapse. And in this case, it was fraudulent as well as confusion around the introduction of CSD, which we tried to tighten up to open up the market once more. And therefore, those are the trends. In terms of spread by value of loans, you see that housing has got the lion's share of the loan book, and largely driven by the fact that about 70% of the loan book for affordable housing developers is around housing. But over the years, we've been brought to spread, and we've done fairly well spread to other provinces. We've got good presence in the Western Cape, in Limpopo, and KZN. That's the income spread, Chair, that comes from various sources, largely lending, as well as program management, but the 17% that is yielded from money market money that are sitting in the bank. Over the years, we've done multi-year programs that we've implemented on behalf of provinces. Some have been closed, in some we're still active in. Particularly in the PhD program, we've done PhD in KZN and Bulindela, supporting them particularly in terms of managing finance and paying service providers as an account administrator. We're starting another PhD in the Nelson Mandela Bay Metro. So the financial results this year, we're reporting a loss of 18 million. And this breaks a trend of positive results that we've reported for over a period of 4 years since the implementation of this strategy. And largely the contributor there has been the progress about that family of contractors that had a way of defrauding us both in the Western Cape and in the Eastern Cape. The next results, I'll run through them as quickly because they are related to the current financial year. Say to report that by we have started the audit because we will have a 6 month year that we will audit at end of September, because since 1st of October we have migrated to NHLC. So we started audit processes, we'll also initiate dissolution processes, and we then formally close NESA, and those will be the dual responsibilities that will sit with as directors to ensure that there's a smooth closure of the company. In the highlights, I said we started well with the year. There have been risks that we are dealing with in this financial year. We've not registered and signed a number of loans because of the types of risks that we see in the market. But what helped this financial year in terms of income and meeting targets is the loan book that we started the year well with at the beginning of the financial year, and we will deal with those recoveries. We have that. We have provided, particularly in affordable housing, we provided as much as we could on those projects that are under distress, and it's a question of working on recovery on those matters. I will skip quickly, Chair. I've just allowed to just show what is in the loan book currently across provinces. We've got a number of provinces. The slide just shows the spread of our loan book, particularly affordable housing across provinces, which is about 5,000. Then subsidy housing over the slide. This is the provision book that we're sitting currently with, which is sort of the worst year of the last 6 years, where we're sitting at 40% impairment that we reporting on, particularly the impairment that rose in the last financial year and they came on and we around that, but also making sure that as all the parties that are playing in the industry, we eliminate those that arose as a result of fraudulence and also the introduction of then I will quickly jump on those and into the financial audit outcome. Can you tell us if you want to comment on this slide, please? I'll prefer to call him Cindy, but I could help.
I understand what you are trying to do. But unfortunately, it won't help. But anyway, could you help?
Thank you very much, good morning. Mine will be very short. NESA has received an unqualified audit outcome with some emphasis of NECA on the following issues: the campaign of function, the order that serves the man, reflect this matter, even though it is wrong, but it says the user of the annual report must know that NECA will be used in the next 12 months. The other matter was the increase in because of the significance of the matter, so you can tell the discussion that we have here at this matter, so the reader must be aware that the increase is not visible. The other matter was irregular expenditure. This irregular expenditure of 1.9, I want to confirm that we have received the settlement. However, because we follow the settlement, the matter was classified as illegal. And I was also informed by the fact that because of the uncertainty about the testimony of the constitution, we have to extend some of conduct. The matter has now been resolved. We have gone out on tender to obtain new service provider. With that expenditure, we reported it for the 8,000 rand. For the 8,000 rand, that ticket expenditure is informed by the fact that NECA was approached by a service provider who said he will organize a report for NECA on the SAC to advertise. Apparently, this is a fraudster who is governed by CBS, and the matter is now in the hands of CBS. They are interested in the matter. We then had to report this because we didn't really receive the service that we paid for. That's why we are putting that matter as a commitment to expenditure. The next item is the financial commitment amounting to $5,096 million. This item is not an issue as such, but because of the significance of the amount involved, the issue themselves they must highlight it. It's not unusual for NECA to make such commitments, because that is how our business is run. Chairperson, that's all I wanted to highlight. Can I hand back to you?
Okay, I'm not, thanks once more. I will not cover the organogram and the vacancies that are there at NECA. I will just cover the last aspect that the current board members will say, we anticipate that they will say up till end of November. They will say up until the approval of the dissolution audit. And after that, they will then resign. And the remaining dissolution activities, formal dissolution activities, will be taken care of by the common secretary and the directors that are remaining. The challenge is really that we face, and I think that we will still face in this transitional period, lending capacity challenges because we have not been able to borrow and create new facilities for lending, and we've always had to use partnerships with financiers to open up a bigger capacity for lending to contractors and developers. And then the strategic matters that we will grapple with going forward: how do we deal with the current products in terms of sustainability, volume, risk margins? I think that's the journey that we're going to get into as NHSC to make sure that we restore sustainability in programs that we have and ensure that the institution is sustainable, yet still fulfilling the development and mandate. And working with the department and collaborations, and I think that the conversations that we've had with the department and Treasury over the last 3 months, the instruction in that area. And then making sure that we continue to endeavor to penetrate the market and deal with transformational issues that we need to facilitate as a financing catalyst. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kot, for that report. Maybe just before I hand over to members to ask questions of clarity or maybe comment, when do you end the stage to that dissolution audit taken?
The time that we started, the auditor should be on site soon, as soon as next week. And we are hoping that towards the end of October, the audit will be finished. So there will be two processes. It will serve as take on balances in the transaction that will be audited, but at the same time then go through the formal board processes and be approved. So the board meeting that has been scheduled has been in November.
Thank you very much. I'm handing over to members to make some comments and maybe welcome Honorable Gabini. I got your apology that you got lost, you went to Waterfront. We thank you for arriving. Thank you, Honorable Gabini. Let me take care. Honorable Katimeng, Honorable Baha, we are going to take a bite. Honorable Bona, thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairman Katim. And thanks for the presentation. Let me start with the issue of vacancies that are here. I see on your list of emphasis from the auditor general was appreciating the task. Which happens to me when I look at your vacancies, you've got senior managers vacancies that are there, and you just admitted that you don't have capacity in terms of the lending issues. You still have the executive director that is to stay in your program to deal with those issues. So when I intend filling this post, because they are the ones that are making it to perform of those things that are expenditures that the auditor general has to expenditure. You also have loss of 18 million. For me, it's a huge amount of money. But this year you were telling us about the consequences that you have, people that are officials who went to this project to direct those funds. The other one, you have already explained the issues of the regular expenditure of 1.4 and the part of 48 million you have. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Katine. Maybe to forgive them as well on the issue of vacancies, Honorable Katine. But remember, they are busy with AMAC, they are consolidating the three entities. So they can't employ when they are busy consolidating to be one. So maybe let's give them that opportunity and see when that consolidation is done, if there is still be such. Your point and your
question. On the back. Chair, just two quick ones on my side. One, related to the 18 million that the Honourable referred to. My question basically is that we know the family now who the first time affects. Are there any recovery plans in terms of recovering what they have given what they have ended before? Secondly, on the provider check that purported to be offering you a slot on SABC, is there no, in terms of your procurement process, is there no way of scrutinizing or verifying the authenticity or the credibility of an entity or an individual that promises to provide you with a good service. In a sense, I'm saying, can I just call you and say, this is what I will do for you, and you just pay me without even knowing whether I'm in a real deal or not. Again, check on irregular expenditure. If I heard correctly, the reason was that treasury processes were not followed to the letter. And for me, I think that should be basic now these days. How did you, how were you not able to follow the treasury processes to that? I know it's not a significant amount, but I'm just saying that the principle of how do you get to that point. Thank you, Jeremy.
Thank you very much, Honorable Saka. It might be insignificant today, but if you don't deal with it, it will be significant tomorrow. Honorable Fala, what did you want to say? No. Plus Honorable Fala.
I also welcome the presentation with the details that have been supplied. I've been covered partially on the fourth issue, but I wanted to find out if it enters there's a matter of emphasis that is about 500 million and something with it. With the relation commitment. Your explanation is that the kind of business that we are involved in. Is the emphasis a matter of no guarantee from where the commitment is, or why is the routine work for the nature of our business. The department has alluded to the fact that it is the only department so far that has admitted the 30% set aside. And in one of the statements, it's a question of issues that we are dealing with, which is that to youth, women, and people with disabilities. Going forward, even though there is going to be some amalgamation, is there a plan relating to the 50% set aside? And what has been the activity during the course of?
Thank you, Chair. I have two questions. One is based on the provincial spread of the value of loans. A lot of it goes to Captain, which is over 55%. But what's extraordinary for me is that both the Northern Cape and the Northwest is zero. And maybe if you can elaborate on what influences such in those instances so that we can have a insight of what are the contributing factors, because there's nothing on the document that leads to what are the causes to this. And secondly, it's related to where Honorable Goldman ended with regards to, because your mandate is to provide bridging finance, but there's no, again, indication of the extent that we have gone with regards to young contractors, female contractors, and you know, to piggyback on the point that he made with disabled contractors, because that is what will give us a measure of whether you are making inroads into the demographics that are needed to bridge the inequality that exists in the industry. And without it, I think it doesn't give us a clear picture of how far your efforts have gone in terms of empowerment programs, but also to make the industry more inclusive. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much, Honorable Magad and Honorable Member. So that we don't seem to be over-labored at the point on your soil in terms of the finances, particularly for around the issue of equity. I think the point we're raising is that the department yesterday in the convention, they have not met these requirements in terms of gender representation and young people. And we believe that the entities can go a long way in assisting the department to meet that challenge. Because obviously, the department is the department through its process. So if the entities are not compliant, obviously the department won't comply. I think our question from the members is based on that, because the department has not met this requirement. Because from where we are sitting, it doesn't look like the entity sees it as a requirement and the policy position. Yet the department has actually regularized it as a policy. I think that's why you're doing it. So then when you will respond, you respond in that way.
Thank you very much. Okay, thank you. But, let me start on that. There will be a group of questions that are related, and I'm hoping that I will cover all members. But if I may start with what is behind our logic. Yes, we've been shy of saying that in the plan, but the annual report covers those matters fairly well. The contractor loan book, which is made up of easily about 90 projects and active across the country now, about 50% of that loan book are women controlled construction contracts. 90% of that loan book are PDI contracts. So that's the loan book. And that's the conversation that I'm talking about, that we're talking with Treasury and the National Department. That facility called contractor finance is meant exactly for youth, women, and new entrants in the industry. And it allows us to finance those entities up to 10 million without 100% loan, because they do not have either an asset base or a strength of balance sheet to secure it as tangible financial goal, can say, if you default, we go for your assets. Hence, it becomes important that all departments that are appointing contractors, there are rules of allowing lending to flow to contractors. And that collaboration is important. So the instruction and the circular that we're working between ourselves, National Treasury, and the National Department of Human Settlement is about defining those rules across provinces and ensure that provinces don't block contractors that are applying for lending because they do not want to collaborate with them. So that's my current point. And therefore, the question that has been raised about Northern Cape and Northwest, that's where I would say it's two reasons there that could cause that. Firstly, it's a market issue. We get applications for contractors that are looking for finance. And therefore, once contractors have tenders, have won tenders, and they come back to us and say they don't have working capital, that's what we are saying, that they are able to deliver contracts. We go across provinces with NHGRC and other human settlement entities doing marketing across provinces, and we effectively engage with the so we've done Northern Cape about 2 months ago. We do that service every 6 months across the year. So there has not been an application in the report that we were reporting on that was coming from the Northern Cape that was successful. But it's a different story when I talk about Northwest. Because Northwest, we had challenges in terms of defaults that we suffered in the Northern Cape, and we had sort of litigation issues as well that are related to that. And as a result, they have not been prepared to collaborate with the risk mitigation and our financing protocol. And that is why we're not financing a lot in that. And that's the matter that the National Department of Human Settlement and National Preservation is defining and working towards something that will be common rules that must be complied by all the public institutions give access to contractors to finance and comply with those rules with as well the cost when they are defaults. So I'm hoping that I'm covering a few questions that are related to that present. The other question that was raised was, is diversion prevalent? Yes, in the core business that we have, diversion is prevalent. Previously, and related again to the rules that we're talking about, how do we lend? We lend to a contractor to finance buying of materials, paying of labor on site, on the back of a certificate, which we call certificate discounting. So that contractor has got a certificate that is in the system that's due for payment. But whilst waiting for that certificate, we allow operations on site to happen. And our source of repayment depends on that certificate paid in the right account that is jointly controlled with the contractor. So if in the process the contractor collaborates with an official somewhere and divert that money into another account, that's fraudulent. And it's prevalent because there's always a temptation for contractors to divert that money elsewhere until parties collaborate very well. So the 6 month trend that I'm talking about where we had low default, it is because instruments were complied properly with the entity. And I think that in this financial year, we need to revisit those rules to make sure that they're compliant. Otherwise, that temptation of diversion remains in the field of the business that we are in. So, Chair, the 30%, so I would say the products that we have are available to finance the 10%. As I said, there was a $20 million financing that we got 4 years ago from the National Department to deepen our trip penetration, and we worked well with Nelson Mandela with HDA financing new entrants in the industry, and that has gained traction, and we've worked with that over the last 3 years. And we need to be spreading that elsewhere in terms of dealing with new entrants, those people that have been subcontractors. But the whole loan book really is about making sure that those contractors that can't access the bank because of security issues or historical credit records are helped to play a part in the economy. And that loan book is actually inspired that made up of those people. There are engagements that we're having with different parties, whether it's GPF or HDA, about catalytic project and how we enter in that space, what are the contracts that are there, can we finance at the back of the contract that has been signed with the developers and the main contractor. And that's where is continuing so that we can finance not only the subcontractors but also the main contractors that have been appointed in those mega projects. Chair, I think that I've covered the bulk of the questions. Let me come to what is related ones. I think that you covered me very well on the vacancies, and it's a matter that we'll be confronting as we go forward in terms of the structure and where the gaps are in terms of the whole NHSC, because there were certain gaps that were raised by Zola as well. So it's from the process. Let me come to the regular processes where they arise from. Largely, they arise from this transitional period. At certain point, and the committee will be aware, we would be anticipating that at a particular point will have an effective date. And therefore, some service providers would take decisions about extending an IT support company to extend a contract by 3 months and by 6 months. But by the time we reach a point where we feel we've been extending this contract and need cold procurement, those good intentions of waiting for the effective date attract audit, negative audit outcomes. And by and large, these are the audit outcomes that came out of that. For instance, within audit outcomes, we had agreed, as the board and these were activities since November last year, to procure all services that were falling behind. And we had procured, we had been busy procuring across legal services, collection companies, and all the services that we require. And as we finalized that process, the effective date came. So it was always about how do we ensure that there's continuity in the business while we're waiting for the effective date, but it would continue to be extended. And I think that in the process of doing those things, we attracted those irregular expenditures as a result of extending contracts. But all of them were done openly through the board and raising those matters with the product at the effective date being given.
Credibility of processes, I think that with the age of fraud sometimes defies even the rules that we have, because our supply chain processes that led to the fraudulent expenditure, they have tested all the documents that needed to be tested. But fraudulence has become so sophisticated that if you just rely on the naked eye, you're going to be losing, and I think we lost on this point. But there's no prevalence around fraudulence when it comes to administrative services that we most of the time require. So this was more of an exception than the rule. But fraudulence when it comes to our operational business is prevalent. It's something that we always have to be alert to as part of the risk management.
Mr. Tao, do you want to cover the commission?
Thanks, Mr. President. As I indicated, the nature of our business is such that if we sign a contract for 2 million today, we don't put that 2 million aside or to anything that the contractor will not come today and withdraw the full approved loan amount. And as a result of that, we show the 2 million as a commitment. As the money is the use, the commitment will count out. Therefore, as at the end of the financial year, this commitment is our normal business process to say we are aware that we have an obligation to finance these projects going forward. It means, therefore, if the contractor or developer comes for a project, we can't say, no, we can't finance this project. There's no money. We need to be alert that we must finance that project. And therefore, something is not normal for our nature of our business, because we commit that we must be in a position to finance the project when the money is required. And that's how we have dealt with our business all the time. Are you going to talk to the other answer? There was a question about, well, then that you know, then the recovery process.
Can I check? The recovery in terms of the fraud that we suffered from those contractors, we've been in and out of court with them. We froze the account when they were dissecting the funds, and we got a court order on that. But you will see that the fraudulence was so deliberate that they would transfer into one account and then continue to transfer it further. By the time we got the court order, in that account they were not sufficient to recover the debt. We're waiting for a court date with the contractors so that we can finalize the matter and be able to decide whether we're going into liquidation and all those related processes that go with legal processes around the matter.
Thank you very much. Are you everybody fine? You want to give that to
I will come on the issue of diversion. The only thing that is worth noting is that it happens in one province. It's not that the diversion is actually happening across all provinces. And the contractor we're referring to is one person with different projects. So from our side, it could have been internal processes that we just need to improve. But from the department side, we also feel that there should be that relationship where we get to a stage where there are things that need to be noted or controls that need to be intensified to be worked together. Hence, we approach the Department of Human Settlement as well as National Treasury just to try and standardize the process, because if you look at it, our biggest pipeline comes from Human Settlement, because this is where it's been allocated jobs by the department. And the only issue that they have is access to funding. Who has the access to funding? It's DFI. So that relationship, that's what we are basically trying to make sure that we intensify that, because with that relationship being improved, we start having a more standardized process where all parties and all stakeholders understand what is their role in the bigger scheme of things. One of the challenges why we can't make inroads in other provinces, the fact that other provinces are not accepting our instruments. But if we can get a standardized process that will come through the national department, it will be easy for all departments to understand that NESHA is the financier for government projects that relates to subsidy or affordable housing or gap, and it will make it easier for us to actually grow the book and make sure that we control these issues of diversion if we put proper risk mitigants in place. And we must also thank the Department of Human Settlement for actually speeding up the process, because our meeting that we had with them, the EMT, has actually helped us to work on the particular, has actually helped us to work with the National Treasury to address the challenges relating to CSD as well as diversion of funds. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mpulileko. You might not know how much we have saved for NESHA. To make sure that you break that cycle from the men.
No, who
will
ever
do that? I'm speaking. Who? How? Who that can? Thank you very much, No, who will ever, for saving the day, because it was starting to be a very funny issue. This issue of this entity that are really monopolized. I think I let me use the word monopolized by them. And one is hoping that as the consolidation takes place here, we are watching this and we will be able to mitigate it. That when the bank comes, we don't have a situation of all men sitting at the top of that human settlement.
I was just introducing Nongulego, the chair. She is the program manager responsible for this contractor finance program, and she's the division program manager for NHFC.
isn't it? I hear you talk about death appeal.
Thank you very much to Nessa. Please you want to say something? Or because I know that this issue has to be first, you will decide the
issue. Sure, I'll partly cover by on the mitigation of the risk. I guess the transferring office like the DG, the NHSC, the receiving authority in this case, which would be the HODs of provinces and the affected companies. At some point we will have to meet to deal with the internet. Nature, we said this area is 20 crores, should not be treated like any other land, because it is a government we have fine. It's important that we prioritize that, especially in the subsidy market. We may have a problem with the affordable market and the cap market, but in the subsidy market, it should not be difficult for nature to recover. Maybe a lasting solution, Chair, will be to insert a mechanism in the Division of Revenue Act. I think we can put the mechanism in the DOR, which will allow Nuru Lebo to do exactly what she has applied. You understand the Ministry of the HODs or the Ministry of the DG or the Ministry of the company to recover that money. After all, it comes from the fiscal. Those funds are funds that are coming from the fiscal in the subsidy market. So it should not be difficult to put a mechanism in the Division of Revenue Act to make it easy for the Junior Settlement Development Act, because going forward, it will be HSDG that will be funding these entities or funding those programs. So we have offered the way to put it in the DOR. If not in the DOR, it's going to be a gentleman's agreement. But if it's in the DOR, it becomes law. It becomes a risk mitigator for you. So that when you lose the funds, you can activate that DOR in the Division of Revenue Act to recover the funds. I think that would be the first question.
Thank you very much. And that may deal with the paradise problem that may be led by the solution. And can we agree then that this issue of the dollar approach to the airport is not a proposal now? We are saying the dollar approach must be considered to them. Can we agree then? Therefore, did you understand what was this saying? Or are you
feeling
the
very big
atrocity? Don't allow those men to use
the very big atrocity. Thank you very much. Chair, I think the Division of Revenue did indeed actually the framework that has to be done through the Division of Revenue. That is correct, the process can be done through that. But it certainly has to be in the framework for step.
Thank you very much.
Then only one point here is the issue of access of contractors accessing nature. Or if you really have to address the bank, because they have said that they no longer use intermediaries. So how the contractor is going to access them at the bank in Pretoria or wherever? Thank you.
You can talk to them in there.
These are going to be part of things, of strategic thinking going forward. We had undertaken to ensure presence in the provinces where we are active. So we were present in the Western Cape, present in the Eastern Cape, present in KZN. But the thinking going forward, there are also
regional offices that are projected in our business case, and those are the conversations that we will deal with going forward.
Can we agree then that when we said to NHS3, when they bring the operational program, it must therefore include the, also the communication and the access. So when you come to do that presentation, where is the similar? When that presentation is part of the operational program, it has to deal with that part as well, of how then the small contractors and the people can come to access the model and all that. Can you agree? Thank you very much. Thank you, Lecha. We are 8 minutes to 11. Have a body break before us present. They are presenting at 11. Allow the DM, if she wants a cup of coffee, to grab a cup of coffee there with them and everybody else. And then at 11 we start.
No, I couldn't ask you yourself. I only come in when the colleagues are not around. So Malaza has taken the day off. If I talk, can you kindly understand? Wi Fi. Everything is Boulevard.
No, I'm growing.
You grow.
It reminds me of fishing. It reminds me of fishing.
I'm not sure if you're going to be able to do that.
I'm going to go back. Members. And this is important because people who are self-employed and informal employees have difficulty accessing housing finance from commercial intermediaries because they don't have true corporate bank account. So when we work with community-based organizations, our strategy is to actually reach those who are informal and self-employed and who are members of these community-based organizations. So intermediaries tend to be aware they take various risks, but we as an institution actually conduct regular risk reviews both in terms of non-credit risk as well as ensuring that the intermediaries comply with management. This committee and the minister have always actually said that we need to find a way of enabling people to access housing finance on an affordable basis. So our board, or the board of us, designed or approved this type of policy, which actually enables that people can actually access housing finance on much, much affordable rates, even though it's unsecured credit. We all know that the maximum rates of unsecured credit are actually approved by the Minister of Trade and Industry in terms of the National Trade Act regulation. But in our case, we are saying that commercial intermediaries can access finance from us at 5-125, provided they also pass the benefits to the market and they say, which in the last row there, they can learn to follow us at REPO plus, and therefore equal to 16.9%. I can safely say, Chairperson and members of the committee, that the majority of borrowers who are testing on our finance are paying around 15% when they access loans, which is much, much cheaper than the maximum currently allowed by the National Credit Act Regulations, which is currently 33.5% if you use the formula repo plus 27%. When it comes to computer regulations, because they are not actually involving in a commercial venture as such, we are able to give them facilities at time minus 2.5%, but again provided they tend to their members only at much, much affordable rates while they try to be sustainable. I'm not going to say much about market conditions. My colleagues themselves actually highlighted how tough the market conditions are currently. But also, if you look at the whole MTSF period, we have had challenges in terms of the growth of the economy, high unemployment rate, that's why we just stayed above 25% throughout the MTSF period. Affordability levels, as measured by debt to income ratio, have been falling down. But again, what we noticed in the Reserve Bank quarterly report issued recently, there was now upswing about 71.3, but it's still high. But in general, the market conditions have been very tough for people in our target market. So on the back of that, our performance in the last financial year, Chairperson, we set the target that we deliver 44,700 loans throughout the year, but what we achieved was 40,921. So about 8.5 below the target. What needs us though is that the loan effect budget is probably in line with our mandate. In the sense that 99% were used for housing, and then only 5% were assessed by people who are earning about 15,000 baht. Remember that in terms of our mandate, 80% of our loans the same must go to people who are earning below 15,000. So we are doing well there. And then also we set annual target of 60% of loans going to people who are earning 3,500 and below. What we achieved was close to 76% of the loans were accessed by people who are earning below 3,500. And then loans to women, the target set by the department or the minister is 30%. What we achieved is 63%. We achieved this target. I mean, I would say every year, I think if you look at the last 5 years or so, we show the slide that the project has confirmed later. Business process indicated that we conduct mandate risk reviews this verification, this necessary for our development contract routine is to make an assessment of funds from us, those existing ones and the new ones who are in our book for the last 6 months and who have access money and land. So the team will require a team, a friend will follow us and visit them at their home so that they can see what the money was used for. If you look at our report, you notice that there are pictures, photographs that we actually show that those photographs are taken on site where people are improving in our own position. So we need to set that target. And then in terms of disbursement, again, on the back of tough market conditions, we have set target of 258 million, but the one we achieved goes to 239 million, which was about 89% of the target, and we're 11% shy of achieving the target. Again, in the context of tough market conditions, we think it was not a bad performance, but bad because people must take those and be able to repay. Financial perspective, in terms of expenditure, we're just below what we spent. We set a target of 37 million, and the actual is close to 32 million rand. I think here, other than just managing costs better, another explanation is that we did not implement the voucher program. We have always budgeted for the voucher program so that when the minister and Minchok approved the implementation, we are not caught off guard. We have extra resources earmarked for the implementation of the program. Then operating surplus, we set the target of 24.5 million, and we slightly exceeded the target because we reached 25 million. I think the explanation here, we would have done much, much better in terms of operating surplus. The second bullet there says surplus likely above budget due to lower, in fact instead of lower due to higher than expected provisions. We have set the target of about 2.7 million to cover provisions, but we ended up having 22 million provisions. So that actually explains why we could not deliver more than what we are approaching here in terms of the surplus. Learning and growth perspective. For us, it's basically a young organization. We said that most of the staff members were employed in 2010. Currently, 9 out of 17 staff members joined us in 2010. So we need to build the capacity to deliver because we deliver to our people. So we put emphasis on the staff going through personal development programs and skills development programs. So again, we are proud that we set a target of 80,000 and we actually paid 380,000 to build capacity on all of our staff to deliver. Now let me report against the MCSS target. At the beginning of the current term of government, we set the target of 233,000 loans that we said we deliver between 2014 and 2019. How we have performed, I've just included quarter one as well for the current financial year assessment. That to indicate that against the target of 233,000, where we are currently sitting at the end of June this current year, we have delivered 176,000 loans, which is about 75.4% of the 5-year target. We are behind, in fact, precisely because of the tough market conditions that we have referred to earlier. Now, when we look at the profile of borrowers who are accessing our funding through our intermediaries, the majority of loans are accessed by women. As you can see, more than 60% of the loans are accessed by women. If you look at profile by income, about 70% of the loans throughout the term of government were accessed by borrowers who earn 3,500 and below. So the fact that a few years ago the maximum or the upper limit was increased to 15,000 has not in any way disadvantaged the people who are in the lowest income segment of our target market. We are a national institution, even though we don't have physical presence in each and every province as well. As I indicated, we deliver through intermediaries, our intermediaries then in all 9 provinces. Because the slide shows that the first province in terms of loans delivered is KwaZulu-Natal, followed by the Eastern Cape and Mpumalanga. Those are classified as rural provinces. So we are leading to those provinces in addition to the rest of the country, so other provinces. We take into account the priorities of government. One of those priorities is rural development. We ensure that our loans are actually accessed by people who live in prioritized rural zones. We started tracking the loans from financial year 2005-06. So what we have delivered cumulatively in rural zones is 192,000 loans, and on the back of close to 900 million lent in those areas. These loans are accessed by both joint families like pensioners as well as professionals who live and work in rural areas. And we also noted the importance of making sure that our funding is able to respond to the special presidential package for mining towns that was announced by the president a few years ago. We started tracking these loans from the financial year 2014-15. What we have delivered during the current term of this government is 31,000 loans, and on the back of about 193 million rand. I will ask the CFO to take the rest of the presentation.
You'll see from our income statement that we performed a lot better in the current year than the previous year. Part of that was because we got quite a big tax refund from SARS after being exempted from income tax. Our expenses were lower than budgeted because of the enlarged, because we have the voucher program working, and our revenue was above budget and above the previous year. Our balance sheet is very strong. You'll see we've got a shareholder capital of 235 million, which is effectively our positive balance. We've got a large loan book. You'll see there is a lot of cash sitting in the bank at the moment, 170 million. That is because of the poor economic climate where we are able to disburse as much as we'd like to. We are working on that and currently trying to get that dispersed. See from our cash flow the amount of money that we generated in the past year. And you can see that because we're getting paid back more than we're actually paying out at the moment by intermediaries. In terms of our governance and audit, our board members, you can see they're all we've got a very small board at the moment. The previous minister decided not to appoint new members because of the pending merger and appoint these board members until the merger was finalized. So effectively once the audit on the last 6 months is up, then these board members will cease to be board members of the company, so will vanish. You'll see that they're also on different committees. We have a very committed board and they have been monitoring both our performance of the entity and the merger process very well. In terms of our audit report, we had a clean audit, no findings, no matter, no qualification. Two determinative objectives, they might have no material findings and did not comply find any instances of non-compliance with legislation. In terms of the winding up of RAL, the operations, we are now a division of NHSC from the 1st of October. We've donated our assets and our registries to NHSC, and in terms of schedule, one of the companies that we have to immediately start the process of winding the company up because of that donation from an NPC. We've got to prepare financial statements at the end of September, which we're busy preparing, and we'll have those audited. We're meeting with our auditors next week to get the audit program sorted out and finalize that. The Ralph Audit and Risk Committee will approve those financials. The board will finally approve it. And then at the same evening as they approve those, they'll pass a resolution to wind up the company. And then we'll lodge a resolution with the CIPC and the Ralph will see then cease to exist as an independent company.
Thank you very much, Mr. Fatal, for that presentation. As you see them sitting there now, technically they are now a division of NHS, no longer around. But obviously the auditing process for the dissolution process will take place in the next year to wind up. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I don't have a question. I'm just commenting and congratulating you for the clean audit. That is even from the previous year, 2016-2017. We hope we are going to do that even in your next financial year where you'll be in now.
There's an item there called social contributions, and it has figures there. So if you can elaborate what those transactions are and how different it is from travel and subsistence. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Honorable
Farah.
Thank you, Chair. My name is only one. Is there any concrete reason why it's being used there?
You mean the housing voucher?
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Those are the questions. And obviously, from my side, just comments. One, we quite comment the fact that in your notebook, at least the 2% is women. We're doing well, that we know the fact that at the helm of the entity of men, by the way, you understand what you are there for. Thank you very much. We appreciate that. We also appreciate the fact that despite the challenges in the economy, you still steadfast in making sure that the interest stays at 15% for the majority of it. In comparison to the 33% that the other banks argue. And I thought it was important to lift that up and understand why you are there in the first place. That your main purpose was to assist those people that couldn't access this low through the government to actually keep on having that. We hope that this thing specialized health will not disappear when you get absorbed by the Human Settlement Development Bank. It's a feature that is very critical for our people. You must take your head and make sure that you actually have an impact at that development. Of course, we can't keep quiet when year in after year you always have a clean audit. We have to commend you for that. And from the time that we started with the entity, you have to know that you are the first entity that actually has a clean audit. And congratulations. Any comments from the department? Okay, you can clap. You can clap. Thank you very much. ATM, no comments left?
No comments left.
You have it in June?
Thank you very much, Chairperson and members of the committee. I request that acknowledge the commendation that we are receiving from this committee. Thank you very much. The board on the January, as well as our role in ensuring that the case management fellows are accessed by women. Thank you for that recognition. I have been able to teach you probably on the voucher team the change that we have before the LFA, just for the benefit of the whatever clients. We are working with the department to revisit the voucher program. There are some revisions that need to be done because a long time ago the council has changed, we're working on that. But it's a physical program that will actually enable poor households to improve their housing conditions in rural areas. Let me give the vote to respond on whatever matters.
In terms of the social contribution, if you look at under compensation to employees, this relates to the pension fund payments and medical aid payments for employees, or probably the fund rather payments for employees.
Okay. Thank you very much. Just to make sure that we don't lose that housing match voucher problem, I probably to concretize it, Mr. Fakazi and Mr. Morava, in that your issues now are increasing. So when that, what did you say that they must come into then? The operational program. Because that was in one of the things, because they say they are working on that with the department on that housing matter. Can we then, when we have that report on that presentation, that as well is attached, because it's a critical factor on what we need to see them not losing it in terms of housing matter and making it. But I don't know how, when will it be ready, and I'm just saying we make sure that it is in the presentation. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, gentlemen. We are supposed to be going to Shura. I don't see them. Are they here?
They know.
So maybe it was by good divine intervention that people decided to come early when they were supposed to present last. So we will take the floor now. Allow introduction of the people that are going to do the presentation, who are they, what position they hold. It's critical for us to know who is it. Can give the mic there to teach me. I'll give mine to the gentleman.
Okay. Thanks very much for the support. My name is Adokunshima Nakamani. I am the teacher of the
Thank you very much. Application, can you introduce the church of people that you want to do that?
She is the acting chief of the church, and then next to him we have Mr. Nancy King, who is the acting CFO. And the idea is to say that people have been in the new partner for business, and then that is the whole thing that is our institution.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chen, and thank you for allowing us to present today. As indicated, my name is Nibola. I'm the acting chief of art. In terms of the performance of the presentation, we're going to look at the annual performance report. We also look at the management structure, the board, the financial performance, and the part of the finance and the media will be played. That is
developed.
I need to start by indicating to those who are not aware of what people is mandated to do, that we are a public presentation act, and we are responsible for regulating the community schemes in South Africa. When we talk community schemes, we are talking segments that are homeowners association and the retirement village. We also provide dispute resolution to the community schemes. We also have an obligation to ensure that everyone who is residing within the community scheme is trained. So we need to be providing education and training, public awareness in terms of our service. And obviously, we need to make sure that the governance within the community seems to maintain. In doing that, we do what we call quality assurance of community scheme governance documentation. Those are the rules, the constitutions that govern the scheme on how the scheme needs to be managed. It is good that the governance documents are in order so that when people buy in, they know what is their right and what is their obligation. In terms of our strategic objectives, we have the first one, which is to regulate community schemes. We did that to do registration of schemes. We didn't meet the targets in the current financial year, so we didn't do that. When the problem in 2016, we had a huge rush of registration which happened in the previous financial year. So currently we are seeing a decline in terms of the number of community schemes that are submitting applications for registration. However, we didn't leave that line. We then went to the head office, we obtained the data of all sectional titles that are approved and all the sectional titles in the region. And what we'll be doing is implementing a project where we'll be going after all the schemes that are not registered. Because at the end, we need to be sure that all the community schemes that we are regulating, they are on our database, they are complying, and they are paying the levy. So that project We have comments with it, and we are envisioning that by the end of the financial year, it must become problems, wherein maybe some of the schemes will be coming through for registration. Currently, we are sitting in terms of the number of schemes in Jeans and have the ones that were registered. We are sitting at 27 for the time. This is a spread in terms of the community schemes that we register, with more being sectional titles followed by homeowners. And in terms of the key schemes, most of the schemes are situated in housing, followed by Western Cape, Central Eastern Cape. There has been a growth in the Eastern Cape where we have seen new developments of new schemes being established within Eastern Cape, more particularly in Portland. This is just the details of the number of schemes registered in people. In terms of the quality assurance of team governance documentation dealing with the talent, the challenge was that at that point we didn't have capacity, but what we have done, we have seen capacity to meet. In the current year, in the first quarter, we managed to meet the target in terms of the team governance documentation, that was quality assurance. So there is progress in terms of how we are managing to provide quality assurance to all the governance documentation. In terms of dispute resolution, we have met the target and we exceeded it by 4%. We are assisted by the deployment of part-time adjudicators that are currently assisting us in terms of resolving all the cases. In the financial year, under review, we managed to deal with a total number of 4,060 disputes. This is an increase compared to the 1,282 we had in the previous financial year. In terms of stakeholder education and training, in the previous year what we did is we went to what we call roadshows, where we went throughout the provinces where we're introducing people services, providing clarity in terms of the implementation and interpretation of the Fiscal Act, our role, the obligations of the scheme, and what they are expected in terms of the Fiscal Act. That target was achieved. We also commenced with our newsletter, where we distribute our newsletter to all our stakeholders in terms of the data. We also had 4 consumer awareness programs. That target was achieved. With regard to the awareness campaign, we're supposed to have done 12, we only managed 9. This was impacted by the fact that the OMBAD, who was supposed to be doing the stakeholder engagement, were also involved in the stakeholder awareness that we undertook for the 9 problems. We were supposed to have established an office in the current financial year. We have not. Currently, we are in the process of establishing an office in PE and in Bloemfontein. So there will be a change in terms of the target in the coming financial year. In terms of the collection of levies, we managed to collect almost 130 million. That is 80 million more than what we had projected as collection. In terms of our IT uptime, we are feeling okay in terms of how IT is supporting the core business. We have achieved almost 55% in terms of the product target for the entire financial year. Human capital, what I can say is that majority of the position that has been filled are within the core business. So, for an example, within GP, they are fully capacitated. And what we've decided to prioritize is to increase the number of facilitators we have so that they are able to deal with all the disputes that come in. And we've also made a decision that instead of relying on part-time adjudicators, we will have our own internal adjudicators who will deal with all the disputes. So currently we are sitting with a vacancy, but mostly within the support division of people. The board, the term of the board is ending in December. Two of the members are not eligible for the appointment.
the rest are little food, but this process is with the department and the ministry. I'll hand over the financial performance and the audit issues to the acting CFO, just to indicate that we don't have good news to report in terms of we have an adverse finding that was issued by the AG. However, we have developed an action plan to deal with those issues that have been raised by the AG.
Thanks,
Mr.
Good morning. Whereby they received a field police report. I don't know how they did it, but they managed to do it. Maybe we can learn one or two or two things from them. Congratulations to them. And the acting supervisor has already said we don't have good news. We received an adverse opinion from Auditor General. Also, we didn't comply with CFMA as well. We didn't submit our AFF on the 31st of May 2018. We only submitted in June. On the 15th. But anyway, I'll send you through the highlights. In terms of financial position, our current assets, the changes made in the bank account, it improved from 6.8 million to 55 million. The total value for our current assets also it improved from the previous year to 2017. From 31 million to 92 million. And the total bill for our assets, both current and non-current current assets, was 97.2 million. It went up as well, from 36 million from the previous year. The revenue, percent of financial performance, is our income. Revenue from exchange transition. It has also improved as well from 565,000 to 5.9 million. Revenue from non-exchange transactions, it also went up as well from 60 million to 200 million. The factors contributed to that one are the levy. From levy, we collected roughly about 170 million. Which was divided into two allocators of 97.4 million and unallocated of 73.3 million. Expenditure of about 146.6 million. We had a surplus in this year of 59.5 million. Statement of changes. In net assets. At the end of the financial year, on the 31st of March, we had a balance of 91.1 million. Cash flow statement, the cash received from the stakeholders, it went up again from 47.1 million to 200.1 million in the current year. The payments were we paid that for 62.2 million. We had cash flow from operating activities of 139 million. The cash and that cash flow from investment activities, we were to take in some PPE of 872,000. We had investment which we acquired of 100 million. The cash and the cash equivalent which we had at the end of the financial period was 55. Million. Remedial plan to deal with the adverse finding from AG.
As I said before, we didn't comply. We didn't have paper. The time can come. What will the management will do? Will develop a detailed project plan indicating the timeline, detailing the combination of the financial statement. Complete net of revenue from non-exchange transition expenses and receivable from non-exchange transition expenses. This one is related to inadequate system of internal control for recording of all transactions, and we could not reconcile the transaction. The action plan. We already received the database of all business sites, schemes registered with the deal office. Notice will be issued to 80-60% of the identified business sites. Also, what we'll do is we'll engage other government entities, including SARS, SARDA, etc., to obtain the data and other forms of community schemes. Lastly, finally, the recruit personnel then will perform reconciliation manually while waiting to prepare the revenue management system. Cash and cash equivalent. The bank account was opened without approval from the national treasurer. There's a compliance service which has been developed and will be monitored on the monthly basis and reported quarterly to the relevant government structures like the finance and the audit committee. Second one, the finance service has been developed and will be implemented. The third one, maybe it's not very important. Consequence management has been implemented. The status currently is an investigation which is underway by external firms on allegations of misconduct to be reported to the board, which is expected to be completed by the end of this month, the end of October. Other financial assets, still talking about investment of surplus funds as well. This was in the first fund, which institutions that were not approved by national treasury as required by treasury regulation 31.2.1. Action plan consequence management will be implemented. The state card. As it says, currently there's an investigation which is underway on allegations of misconduct. Statement of comparison of budget to actual amount not agreeing to approve budget. Also, effective and appropriate steps were not taken to prevent irregular expenditure of 26.7 million. The action plan. We identify monthly reporting that we presented to the ELCO on the monthly meeting. Also, consequence management will be implemented. The first improved report will be presented to ELCO on the directors of October 28th. Investigation is still in the process on the rate allocation. Also, on cash and cash equivalent, investment of surplus funds. Also, it relates to opening the bank account without the approval from the secretary. Investment policy shall be updated with the amendment to include the treasury regulation. Future investment will follow the proper processes as the approved policy. Also, the current data, currently there is an investigation on allegations of misconduct. Lastly, preparation for calculated
incorrect. It was one of the findings from the Auditor General. But this quotations were not awarded to bidders based on the preference points that were not calculated in the in accordance with the Triple P, FA, and its regulations. What we are doing now, SEM will make use of a manual point system calculation to verify the system generated calculation. Then I'll hand over to the next speaker.
Perhaps in conclusion, as you are aware, there has been a lot of negative coaching surrounding people. And what we have done as management, we have engaged the industry representative bodies. We've had meetings with NAMA, that is the industry that is present for the limited agents. We've also had a meeting with ARC, they represent the homeowners association. The meeting was positive in that immediately after the meeting with NAMA, NAMA issued a statement to each member telling them that we need to continue paying the levy. Because we had a challenge in terms of within the first quarter of the current financial year, there was a decline in terms of the levy that was being paid to people. So what we have noticed after those engagements, there has been a positive response from the team. So in the current quarter, we are going to be reporting a positive in terms of the levy that has been paid to by the community team. And as a follow-up, we'll be going out to the actual community team themselves. We'll be starting in the Western Cape, going to KZN, Eastern Cape, and then we'll finish the bushwood in Gauteng. The intention being that we need to build back the confidence that has been lost to assure the industry that people are still there, we are still relevant service. We are still providing this good resolution, and that they need to continue to pay their levies, they need to continue bringing service. We are hoping that by the end of the roadshows that you were going to be embarking on around November, there will be a change in terms of perspective towards people, and that will bring maybe a positive change in terms of levy payment and then
registration.
Thank you very much. Any additions to the project board member?
No.
You are okay. You are okay. Thank you very much. We appreciate your report. Whilst we are aware that there is an investigation going on, actually doubling. Okay, good. can we need to be put into confidence about the process that we have that before that connect. We also would know that probably there will be questions of clarity that you might not be able to specify us because of the investigation. But know that you can, it will be in your best interest. But obviously, we also understand that there is no we don't want to do it of that kind. So thank you very much. Let me then allow the members to comment and ask questions. But maybe before I do that, that is one clarity question. Probably the CFO will also help us from the department. That it comes to my mind. In the sense that resource is lifting up a 26 million irregular expenditure. AG has lifted up a 26 million irregular expenditure that had had an impact to the rise of the department's irregular expenditure 21 million, which they said 26 million comes from the top. If we could probably have that clarity there, I'm asking that question because in the last financial year, when the top came here, they were begging for a 26 million because they had a shortfall and they wanted to do certain things and they couldn't pay it down. But I want to have that, but it's just the $26 million that they had asked from the department at that time when they were not collecting levies, and what happened? Because my understanding at the time, I didn't ask this other day because I didn't want to ask it from the department. My understanding at the time was that as soon as they are able to collect levies, they will then pay the department. But that's why I asked that before I ask the question. Is this the statement of the U.S.? That's all I want to understand. And then I can, then we can then start.
Thank you very much. Chair, the simple answer is no. Simply because CISOS is not in a position to can request money from the department to cover up the irregular expenditure. The money that CISOS wanted them was to back up the debt in general, that they had not enough money that they had collected because the money was in a trust and they did not have access to that. However, from the irregular expenditure but because processes which were not proposed, we would not have been in a position to even take it up to them. Simply because processes of investigation and process of disciplination needed to be taken on that particular issue or on that particular matter. So these are two different cases, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm opening up to members for questions of class, for comments, for whatever. Let's start with Honorable Kwaraki, followed by Honorable Baka, followed by Honorable Kalim. Do you have a hand up?
Even today, they are still saying that they are still in the process of that process. I don't know how I can call it, but it's always there. But there's no progress. It's just extreme for sure. What I'm saying to each other, I'm afraid of someone else.
Yes, they are afraid. Oh, okay.
Chairman, I think that one of the things that has come to light is that poor performance by entities, as you indicated, pulls down the entire. All the efforts that are put in place by the department are eroded by entities that are not performing as expected. I don't know, I'm just, you know, opening up by explaining that one, Chair. Two, I think that, Chairperson, the recovery strategy for this role will be determined, I assume, by the completion and finalization of the investigation and the entire process. Now, I would love to get a sense of what is the projected time of completing the process. Because for as long as the cloud is hanging over this office, and even if meetings are convened to convince stakeholders that you are still in business,
for as long as this issue drags on, that cloud will always be there. Now, I'm just asking for a sense here of the projected time. Thirdly, Chairman, I think that maybe let me say, I would want to know what is the extent of the investigation. Because I think that as a board member who has led in an era of such mishappening, something has happened to myself. Something that says, to what extent has the board done its oversight role on the executive? How have they contributed or not contributed to the state that this was in? Because I heard that some might be elected, some might stand for re-election, and some might not. And for me, I would have said that, for instance, the Honorable Martin, if this could have happened in my reign, I would say that let me give space or give effort to open up board positions for people who will come up with new ideas. People will make sure that things are done correctly. I'm just checking to what extent is the investigation taking place. The last one, Chairperson, is that what is the scope of this investigation? Because remember, there's money invested that is now with a bank that is not supposed to be. And now, with that in mind, and also the irregular expenditure as well, is it covering all of it, or is it specific to the money that was incorrectly, you know, put on that bank from the book? Thank you, Chairman.
Which bank? Thank you very much, Honorable Baka. Honorable David.
No, thank you. Now I'm comfortable. In the morning, I can't hear you. You work on me.
I'm just looking
at the presentation of the Cooperative Ombudsman Service. It shows that the Ombudsman Service didn't work well. And I'm also looking at the remedial plan. The remedial plan is too, I don't know whether it's too general, and you can't even say it's going to be available. Because even then, if in a plan you raise the question to say we are still going to engage in a plan, there will be a problem. So it means that the plan is not going to be achieved. So we are still going to have this particular problem, even if they come up next time. So we are still going to have such a problems. Then the other thing is that in order to raise up the expectation to the people or to us as a committee, they don't know. It will take some time. It will take some time. So this is a concern I'm hearing. Thank you.
Thanks, sir.
I think for me the extraordinary thing is what was not said in the presentation. given what is the object, you know, everyone here about the status of CISOs and its performance. But more interestingly for me is around the major audit plan. For me, I mean, this is just a simplistic boxing exercise so that it's there on the document, on the presentation. There's nothing concrete in there that, from just reading it, that restores confidence in me to say that you have a grasp of what the challenges are and you have a clear sense of clarity in terms of what needs to be done going forward, so that what has led to the regression can be reversed. But secondly, Chair, there was a statement made by the Minister yesterday with regards to the investigation that she had made a request to the leadership at CISOs that she would institute an investigation, and notwithstanding that, CISOs went ahead and appointed its own investigator, or instituted its own investigation, which means that we now have a situation where there are two investigations taking place on the same issue. And I think it's important to know why that request or submission from the minister was ignored, and what were the reasons, and also to find out like what's the thinking behind that, because it's all well and nice to confess ahead of a presentation here about the difficulties that you had, but you are there now, and your responsibility is not to lead during good times, you also lead during difficult times, and you are here now, so you have to account for what is here now, and we can only engage you on what is in front of us, and what is in front of us is this depressing picture of CISOs. So as a semantic aside, there's a taking sense of taking responsibility about what the leadership, be it the proposal or the executive or jointly or individually, of taking responsibility about what has happened there at CISOs. And I think for me it's the disappointing part from the leadership, because you cannot begin a process of correcting wrongs without taking responsibility. You can't. And by, you know, downplaying that, I think you're not being fair to the process that seeks to restore the confidence that some of us have begun to lose in the entity and in the leadership. So I hope that in the response you'll try to be more detailed in terms of the questions you have raised around some of the actions that led up to this situation. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable
Mathis. Sir, though my hand was not up.
Sorry, no, you can.
Yeah, but just to make an observation from the previous presentation, and when you compare it with what they presented to us, and now at least you can see that we are trying to run an institution, because previously it was about traveling and accommodation, if my memory serves me well. So, the only disappointing factor is that the opening and the closing of the presentation, both presenters did not instill any hope. And the lady said, yeah, there's a high decline on applications. So that on its own, it shows that members of the public, they just lost confidence. It could be about your response time and approval of applications, maybe how you communicate and how you interact with them. But where there's an opportunity for people to benefit, if you see a decline, you must know that there's a problem with your management style. And the CFO, the first sentence when we opened, they just say, hey, it is not
compliance with PLA. And if you check, why do we have PSMA? I don't know if you understand not being compliant with PSMA. What does that mean? It says that the PSMA is defined as a regulation of financial management to ensure that all revenues, expenditures, assets, and liabilities are managed efficiently and effectively, and to provide for the responsibilities of response and trusted with financial management and matters connected therewith. So if you are unable to comply with PSMA and as a CFO, openly and proudly, you admit to that. It could mean also you are saying your institution must be operated. Given the fact that your internal systems also are not in place. So we don't understand when you wake up in the morning what you do. Do you hold regular meetings? Where do you account? How often does the executive interact with yourself and all that? You know, then it opens up for a lot of things. One other thing that I think is also missing in this presentation is just you have presented a remedial audit plan. It's a compliance management framework. You're not saying anything about it. At least you should have also presented the committee with the compliance monitoring plan. Then we'll be able to follow and track your progress, or do you really want to sustain this entity, or you want Parliament to then recommend that this entity should cease to get to exist.
Thank you very much. I'm not allowed to land it.
Do you want to say something?
You're fine.
No, I'm fine. I'm just there are two issues that are sticking out, but there are a lot of material issues. I see there's an overperformance of 64% in solving of problems, and there's also a poor collection. And I just wondered, is that the reason why we are putting those ones in bold letters, the rest in small letters? Because the others are very worried.
Well, thank you very much. Maybe just to start there, maybe the question should be, I don't know if you saw, they set their target at 60% in collections, which is very low. Why would you not put your target at 100%? Now, the collection is in both letters because they have met the 60%, not the 100%. But anyway, I'm not there. That's just a Bible word. Two issues that are critical to me. We interacted with yourself, Christoph, several times. We even went to do an oversight in your head office. When did you go there? In January this year, 2018. There were two critical issues that we were discussing with you. One was the issue of the process and the manner of how you collect. And you yourselves were telling us that there is a discussion between SAL and yourselves to make sure that these levies are collected in a correct manner, one, so that you don't have the situation where
in the last financial year, there was a fine of 30 million members, which you could not account for, because you couldn't know where they collected those money. Now, you then were having discussions with FAC, and the report that you received was that you were waiting for a concurrent agreement between two ministers, Minister of Finance and the Minister of Human Settlement, to agree on this problem. Critical issue, that actually is the backbone of how you function. But the report is very quiet about this problem. Where that then is what happened since then. That's one. The second critical issue that you reported to us was the issue of training, if I remember. You even went to Australia to go and learn best practice on training, because it was important for you to make sure that you roll out training, which was going to be one of the biggest. The report is quiet. We are not hearing anything about this problem. Two critical things that actually make it clear. Now, I am not going to ask anything about the investment. All that I want to know is that, as we keep on saying this double investigation, the Deputy Chair of the Board is triple investigation. Can you clarify to us this triple investigation? Maybe as you try and respond to the scope of these investigations without telling us the details, but we want to understand why triple. We were still shocked about double. But now we are more shocked about the triple. Now, let me tell you why we are shocked. Because if you are going to have triple investigation on the same issue, sitting here, what it tells us is that there is a breakdown of management at CISO. Somebody decides to do something else, another one decides to do something else, the minister has actually instituted an investigation, there's two more. Can we be clarified on that? Well, I think it talks to what actually, do we still have a rule of law in the simple management practices, are they still in place? So that we have that comfort. Now, you have an adverse opinion from KG. Now, the acting CFO is saying one of the reasons why you have an adverse opinion is because you submitted late. I corroborate. You submitted late. The submission, so in other words, you did not comply with the process. Now, Honorable Mane has tried to get to the Public Finance Management Act, but she tried to be very, to summarize it. But I think it's very critical. Because, look, if you go to Section 55 of the Public Management Act, which is PFMA in English. It says the accounting authority for a public entity, which is not in this particular case, must keep full and proper record of the financial affairs of the public entity. That's one. Two, you must prepare financial statements for each financial year in accordance with generally accepted accounting practices, unless the accounting standards board approves the application that you won't be able to comply. Maybe you will have to tell us, was there an application from the accounting standards board that said you must not comply? But thirdly, it says you must submit those financial statements
within 2 months after the end of the financial year. Now, financial year ends in March. That means by the end of May, you must submit this financial report. Now, acting CFO said, we submit it later. But you see, it doesn't then tell us what were the challenges that made you to submit it, be submitted. H, we wish we can then get that to be from as we have, we don't have good news, we've got access. Right? But you see, when you sit in front of the portfolio of Alan, you should be able to mitigate your reason that will, as we sit here, we are able to understand the difficulties that you had that made you not being able to comply. Now, the problem that we have been sitting here is that we don't seem to grasp the problems that we have had that made you not to comply. Now, as the portfolio committee, one of our big responsibilities is to be able to do oversight effectively over the department and its entities. Immediately, we are not able to do that. We are able, as these individuals, to put Parliament because we then are not able to do our work. And you sitting there, you are not assisting us sitting here to be able to say we can do our work with the report that you've given us. The report does not inspire confidence. The report is just about the report is not a report that when you sit here you can say, you know, they feel that they have done something wrong. This is supposed to be done. Now, where is the digital? Now, the Department of Human Settlements, this entity is your entity. It's an entity that has got its rules and regulations and acts that we have passed in 2017. But it is an entity at the end of the day that is an entity that falls under the settlement. I'm sitting here. We don't want to believe that if we say to you, go back and implement the turnaround, which you, if you remember, even at the time that we were there in January, we spoke about turnaround strategy that must be done by the system to make sure that it is on the right track. Now, I am tempted to say the Department of Human Settlement must assist us to take full responsibility of the source. Because if the source falls as it is now on that road, we will all be responsible for not having done our work effectively. I want to believe that we want, as this committee, to ask the department to assist us. It will have to assist us to take full responsibility of your entity. It is your entity. As the portfolio committee, we will write a letter to the minister. We will write a letter to the minister citing our reason why we feel that at this point in time, CISOS needs assistance, full assistance from the department. If we don't do that, we will all blame ourselves tomorrow that we did not do enough to assist CISOS. CISOS is a fairly new entity. Fairly new. CISOS is an entity that must, at the end of the day, all of us, we must be proud of the fact that it is working and effective as it should. It is collecting a revenue from the public. It has a responsibility of making sure that that money is kept. We are sitting with an investment of 80 million that is at VPS, which no one, hopefully the investigation will explain. But my point here is that we can't hold our arms. We cannot be able to say you will be able to turn yourself around. The department must help you to turn the entity around. We are giving the department, and that's what we will say in the letter, we are giving the department 6 months to actually turn that entity around. And they must come back and report to us in 6 months the things that they have done, what they have put in place, and what is it that they're going to do. I think it is going to be very unfair and sitting here to actually expect those young people there that have been put there to act, that we think that they will be able to answer our questions. That's what it means. They can try. They have been put there to act. The people that have actually been responsible for what has happened are not there. As far as I know. She's acting, she's acting careful. The last time that we have interacted with sisters, there was Advocate Yutele, who was the Ombu. There was Mr. Mabuya, who was the CFO. They are not there. So now, we want to actually kill those people. Is that what our responsibility is now, as a committee? To actually measure people that have been given a job that is beyond them? To actually turn an entity that is almost on its knees? The department must tell us, they must come and present and tell us how, what is that they're going to do. This is just me. They must come and tell us how you are going to turn that around. You tell us within 6 weeks, but you come back in 6 months to tell us what you have done to turn it around. That's it. I don't know how members feel.
Thank you, Chair. I think, Chairperson, I raised my hand because normally we never take a second bite after we, you know, make our input. But I think what you are raising is critical in trying to get to this turnaround. Because, you know, even looking back at what I raised as questions of clarity, raising those questions also, I felt that it's questions that I wanted to ask, but not expecting much from the two people who are sitting there. Now, I'm raising my hand now to say I support what you are raising, and I hope that all of us will agree that that should be the stance that we take as this particular committee. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Professor. Honorable Madam.
Thank you, Chair. Oh, Rabuli no Dube. Bona baya kwey. Bona, me baya kwey ni bo kara chwey. Me baya kwey ni bona rechi. Bona baya kwey ni chwey. For the message that they have accepted, respecting, they are benefiting financially, we are paying them. So we cannot say we are exempting them. Because if you take over an institution, you come willingly and knowing exactly what are the questions in that institution. You see, that the statement that most people who are in the administration will say, government comes and goes, and the state will remain. Am I saying it correctly? Government comes and goes and the state will remain. So it means whatever happens, 6 months till me and you will be out of office. It will be elections. So I'm saying 6 months is too long. Pretty close.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I just want to align myself with your statement that the department must come in and help us. It is a way to go in the response and be correct. Thank you very much.
Chair, I'm ambivalent about what you suggested, so in that case I'll just defer to your judgment.
Thank you very much, Honorable Woman.
Deputy Minister?
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you very much. And I can see the reasons why you are saying that this work must be under administration. Because that's exactly what you are saying right now. I think one of the things that we want to put on the table is the fact that CISCO's establishment indicated a breakthrough in the department, that we have an entity that is going out there to help the sexual title his holder. But on top of it, it's money-making scheme. And it seems that we did not get into detail in terms of this issue of collecting this revenue. Revenue collected for what? And what must be done with it? And how it could be protected, this process. And I think the administration of the department in two seasons must delve into that particular issue. So at the end of the day, we are not found wanting once more. And I agree, Chairperson, with you. It must be put at administration and we move from that premise. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. Raised his head last week, so I just want to make sure that I don't break protocol to allow this official to speak after you, but let me just allow that. So I'm going to give Cindy and give CBG Chen to speak on behalf of the department.
Thank you, Chairperson, Deputy Minister, Honorable Members. It is our responsibility as a department to provide oversight over the entities that we established to assist us in the human settlement mandate. And it is also our responsibility to assist the portfolio committee in managing the affairs of the entities that that are operating under human settlement. We take the directives of the portfolio committee to come and present the turnaround strategy in 6 weeks, and in 6 months also to come back and present to the portfolio committee as to what we are. Our understanding is that in terms of the investigation, we will propose that we allow the investigation to finish. Then we will take the outcome of the investigation and in terms of the past line. Also, all the letters that have been reflected here, they will be covered by the investigation. Thank you. The number one investigation that has been instituted by the Section 7.
Thank you very much. Can we have...
Thank you, Chair.
Chair, I think it's just important that I don't want to leave the portfolio committee and with the impression that both from the department as well as the minister that there's been no action taken. I don't want us to walk away from here that we've allowed, or as a department or the minister, we've watched this implosion, if one wants to call it for corrupt. I don't want us to. I think in many respects, when we do come back as DDG, we will provide a timeline, but we will also provide the committee with what are those interventions, what are those issues that we've raised over the last 3 years and the CISOS management, and which we expected. I also don't want us to leave under the impression that Minister sat by and watched. No, as soon as Minister became aware of this, there were certain actions taken by Minister. And the point I think we need to get around the question of the investigation, that the Minister has at all material times informed both the management as well as the board of her intention. One, in the first instance where we got to know of this, we asked the AG, and the AG indicated that they would do a regulatory audit. And that regulatory audit has picked up some of the issues that are in the audit report. And as a result of that regulatory audit finding, Minister then took the decision, and quite rightly so, informed the board, informed the management that this is what I'm doing in relation to the issues that we should have brought to attention. I think I don't want us to and at all material times, it was up to, and I think the board members are here, and they are well aware of the consultation that took place between the minister. And the other point is that at all material times, we were between the minister and minister indicated to us, we must act within the accordance of the PFMA and do what is legally within the ambit for minister, because I think what we didn't want to do as the department and the ministry is overstep and over and create a situation where we undermine the board, because remember there is a board in place, and that board has certain responsibilities. So I think that at all material times we respected that and ministers respected that. But Chair, I think as Dean Norm has indicated, we will come back with that, with a turnaround plan. But in putting that turnaround plan before you, what we've done in relation to that, there's also the investigation. In relation to the investigation that we have through the ministry instituted, we've given that team 8 weeks. So we said to them, you have 8 weeks to come back to us and tell us what you found, and to provide us then with the framework on what are the corrective measures or the actions that need to be taken. We don't want this to be long drawn out, and I thought we thought that 8 weeks would be something that would allow that team to be able to, it's an external team, but it would be able to achieve that. And within the context of that, what then would be with the turnaround plan? Thanks.
Thank you very much, from the officials from the department and the deputy minister and the members of the committee. And I just want to say and appreciate the presence of the two members of the board that are sitting here, because when it gets very hot in the kitchen, very few people want to face the consequences. And in spite of everything, they are here. And they decided that they are not going to allow the officials to come alone. They will be sitting with them here because they know that they have a responsibility. And I really want to appreciate that from the bottom of my heart. And also, the fact that I know, I'm sure, Nati, you didn't sleep last night. You didn't sleep last night. You're very tired and energized. And we're wondering what is going to happen. But you decided that, despite that, you will come and represent the institution that we're supposed to. And we really want you to understand that it is not personal. It is not because you cannot do your work. It is not about yourself as individual. It is just about the institution. And you take that home
and actually the child was the fact that you sat there and faced the rest of the members of parliament of something that you are partially not responsible for. But you knew that there is what is called in a institution collective responsibility. And you came here and you decided that you should present yourself. Thank you very much. And therefore, understand that what you are doing here has got nothing to do with any service. It is about making sure that you save your job in the institution. That institution doesn't go under. And therefore, we have more people that will not work. We have to save it now so that the people that are there are able to have a secure future. Thank you very much. Not just that.
Thank you.